Current state on 90.5 WKAR. For generations, National Geographic magazine has brought images of the world, stunning and subtle, to millions of people. Its parent organization, the National Geographic Society, was founded in 1888 by 33 men whose ranks included John Wesley Powell, the explorer who led a famous expedition to the Grand Canyon back in 1869. You might remember the magazine's most emblematic image, a 1984 photograph of a teenage Afghan girl with penetrating green eyes. Today, National Geographic continues its scientific and educational mission in the digital age. Susan Goldberg is the magazine's editor-in-chief. She's the first woman ever to hold that post, and she's also an alumna of Michigan State University. She was on campus this week to talk with today's up-and-coming writers and photojournalists here at MSU. I asked Susan Goldberg what it feels like to be at the helm of one of the world's most prestigious publications.
Well, it's shocking, and it's a great honor. I love my job. I feel like I'm the luckiest person in the world.
What's your guiding principle as editor-in-chief, your vision for National Geographic?
Well, there's about five things that I think we really need to do. I want to tell stories that make a difference. I want to tell stories that nobody else can tell. You know, we do a unique brand of journalism. I want to make sure that we keep distinguishing ourselves in those ways with our global reach and our visual journalism. I want us to act urgently when urgency is called for and publish immediately on our digital platforms and not make people wait months for stories. If we need to give people the stories in moments, not months, we should do that. I want to do some of the kinds of stories that National Geographic is known for. Animals, history, dinosaurs. Those are very strong stories for us. Readers love them, and we need to keep doing them, even as we try to do stories that are more timely, more current, and part of the conversation.
How do you view the type of storytelling that National Geographic embodies? And what do you tell young, aspiring writers and photojournalists about that? How do you give them the context for what National Geographic embodies and represents?
Well, one of the great things about being at National Geographic now is that the stories that are, you know, in our wheelhouse, environment, climate change, species preservation, cultures, a lot of these stories used to be kind of at the fringes of the national conversation. They have become very central to the national conversation. So I think that I'm very lucky at this time that the topics that we naturally cover are, on the tips of everybody's tongue.
Is it easier then to explain National Geographic's role to younger people?
I think it's easy to explain because we are have such a strong digital presence. We're the largest brand on Instagram, and so that is not your grandfather's National Geographic.
That's a pretty good place to be.
That's
in 2015, right. I would think. The writers and photographers who work for the magazine routinely go to extraordinary locations and sometimes dangerous parts of the world on their assignments. How do you prepare them for that work?
Most of the writers and photographers that we work with have long experience in going to some of these tougher places. So they're coming to us often with the story proposals. So they will have often been very familiar with covering work in a war zone or dealing with refugees or looking at a place that's drought-stricken. So they know the world. The people who work for us know the world. So I don't feel like we need to prepare them.
Mm-hmm. We're talking with Susan Goldberg, the editor-in-chief of National Geographic Magazine and News. Susan's also an alumna of Michigan State University and serves on the board of the College of Communication Arts and Sciences here at MSU. Who do you view as your target demographic today?
Curious people.
Of all ages?
Of all ages and all genders and all ethnicities. You know, of course, our magazine readers tend to be a little bit older than the people who are reading us on some digital manifestation. But I think that the main thing that everybody has in common is these are people who are curious about the world. And that's a great reader to have.
Where do you move the most copies of the magazine around the world? I mean, is it clearly the United States?
It is clearly.
Western Europe? Where is that?
So we publish in 40 languages. We're in 40 other countries outside of the United States. But the United States is our biggest circulation market.
What's your philosophy on the marriage of words with images? Do they ever compete for attention?
Oh, I think that they buttress and support one another. Our storytelling is so much more powerful when we can bring the words and the pictures together. That's when we can tell.
How hard is that, though? How hard is it to blend those elements skillfully and well?
It's hard.
It's got to be a lot of work.
It's hard, and that's why, you know, we've got incredibly talented people at National Geographic who are really good at doing that. But it's true, not everybody can do that easily.
Do you ever go on assignments?
I've gone on a couple of assignments. We have a fellow walking around the world, and he started out in Ethiopia, and he's following the path of earliest man. He's going to go all the way down to the tip of South America. So he and I walked together for 3 days right on the border of Turkey and Syria. It was quite interesting.
I'm sure. National Geographic launched its cable TV channel in 1997. Has the TV network outpaced or made the magazine less relevant?
I don't think so. Just like the words and the pictures complement each other, I think that the magazine and the television show can complement each other and support the work, get the stories out there to more people in the way they want to get it.
National Geographic magazine goes back to 1888.
That's true.
You are only the 10th editor of the magazine in all those years. How does that work?
Well, people stay for a long time.
I guess so. It's a pretty desirable job to have.
It's a great job to have. It sounds like. So I've been the editor since April. I'm the 10th editor and first woman to hold the job.
Who do you regard as National Geographic's competition? And do you think in those terms?
Oh, sure. I mean, I think the biggest competition that we and all media have are people's time. You know, we are competing for time space as much as anything else, because people are busy. There's a blizzard of choices. There's information coming and going on all kinds of devices. So I would say our biggest competition is people's time. When it comes to doing daily stories, I think our biggest competition is the New York Times.
Hmm. Virtually all newspapers, including our own local paper of record, the Lansing State Journal, has struggled for years with downsizing. The State Journal is responding with more self-directed reporting, fewer editors. As somebody with deep roots in the newspaper business, does that trend concern you?
It concerns me greatly. I think the loss of professional journalists from our ranks, the loss of professional editors, hurts readers, hurts communities, and frankly hurts our democracy.
How many people report to you now?
I'm actually not sure. I'd have to go count, because we use a mix of contractors and staffers, and so I'd have to go figure it out. But some hundreds.
You spent some time in Detroit.
I've spent a lot of time.
Free Press.
Yes.
When were you there, and what stories did you cover? What do you remember from your days at the Free Press?
Well, I was at the Free Press from early in my career, from 1982 to 1987. One of the things I remember most was being the first woman that the Detroit Free Press ever sent to Lansing to cover the governor and the state legislature.
That didn't happen until the 80s.
It didn't happen until 1984.
How about that?
You would think that something like that would have happened in the 50s or even the 30s, but it didn't happen
Indeed.
Until the 80s.
87, see, I flash back on the Delta crash. Were you there in August of 87?
Believe it or not, that was the day that my fiancé and I we had just left the Free Press. The day of that crash, we were packing up and loading the car on our way to join the San Jose Mercury News that very day. Mm. So we didn't cover it, but I just remember watching it on the television.
A jarring day in Michigan history.
Yes, what an incredibly really difficult story.
Have you been back to Detroit recently, and what do you make of the extraordinary circumstances the city is in today, assuming you follow that?
I follow it closely. My family is from Detroit, and I was back there this summer. We are doing a story in National Geographic on Detroit, on the resurgence that's happened in Detroit with all of the National Geographic elements that you might expect. Great storytelling, incredible photos, great mapping, a real sense of place and history. So I went back because I write my letter to readers about it too, and I went and visited the neighborhoods that my parents grew up in to see what had become of them.
And they grew up where? In
they
the
grew
city?
Up, yes, on the near west side of Detroit.
Okay. And are you from the suburbs then, or did you grow up in the city?
I grew up in
Ann Arbor. Ann Arbor.
I don't know how that's going to go over with this audience, but I grew up in Ann Arbor.
And why are you back at Michigan State?
You know, I love coming back to Michigan State. I feel like I owe Michigan State a great deal. Michigan State gave me the training so that when a door was opened for me a little bit in my first internship, I was able to walk through that door and get a full-time job.
Was the internship at the Free Press?
No, the internship was at the Seattle Post-Intelligencer.
Oh,
and so Michigan State gave me the training I needed to succeed when I had the opportunity to do that.
Would you like to put your stamp on this magazine? Do you think in those terms? Do you think more in terms of maintaining a rich heritage, or do you think more in terms of change?
I think right now in media, we have to think in terms of change, how we can tell stories across platforms the way people want to get them. But it is very important to me that we maintain this rich heritage, maintain the very best of National Geographic, but adapt it to be more timely and more relevant.
And as you look ahead to 2015, is there a particular story or series that you're especially excited about?
Well, we've got a story coming out as our March cover story, which should be on the stands in about 10 days. And the headline on it is The War Against Science. And it looks at why reasonable people doubt science when it comes to climate change, evolution, and even vaccines, which has turned out to be a very timely story given the debate going on right now.
It is. Susan Goldberg is the editor-in-chief of National Geographic Magazine and News and a Michigan State University alumna who serves on the board of the College of Communication, Arts, and Sciences in this very building. It was a pleasure talking to you, Susan. Congratulations on your new job.
Thank you. Thank you for having me.